Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, kidlit notables, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner, an elementary school librarian, author of the Busy Librarian blog, and your host. This is episode number 157 with Stephen Malk, respected and revered literary agent at Writer's House. Steve basically grew up in a bookstore, and over time, his admiration and adoration of children's literature turned into a career representing some of the most well-known authors and illustrators in children's publishing today. It's hard to sum up this conversation because it hops from cool stories to cool friends to favorite books and, at some point, to musicians and artists creating picture books. But if you know Steve at all, you'll know there's an awful lot to learn and to love about him. If you like what you hear, I encourage you to download other episodes of Let's Get Busy on your computer or handheld device by subscribing through your preferred podcast host, like Stitcher or iTunes, or by visiting the Let's Get Busy homepage directly. Rating the podcast through stars or reviews on the Stitcher app or on iTunes actually helps the podcast reach a greater audience, which also translates to these podcast hosting tools recommending Let's Get Busy to other listeners, which is a very good thing. Definitely do that if you want to help bring these chats to even more ears. And on that note, it's time to start episode number 157 of the podcast with Stephen Malk. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Stephen Malk. I'm excited to get to talk to you tonight.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm a big fan. You've had many of my clients on, so I'm thrilled to be here.
Hey, and as I was saying to you before recording, I feel like I know you well already because of how many of your clients I've ended up speaking to, or I've ended up, I guess, knowing that they are connected to you because they come onto the podcast and then they say such great things about you. And that's been really cool for me as a librarian to hear the people that sort of unprovoked get talked about on this podcast, that we talk about spouses and children and influences, and you come up. That tells me, Steve, that you've got really great relationships with your clients and that you're, you know, a part of their life.
Yeah, it really is the best part of the job is just the relationships. Now that I've been doing this almost 20 years, which is kind of hard to believe, I've just built such long relationships with people, and, you know, the relationships have grown and evolved as we've grown and evolved, and their work has. And, you know, I guess it really kind of hit home for me when I got married, and Mac Barnett actually officiated our wedding, and Lane.
I was just like, he is a client of yours.
Mac is a client of mine. And did an absolutely amazing job. Lane Smith and his wife Molly Leach did our invitation. Marla Frazee did the favor, and John Cheska did a toast. It was kind of like a dream, but it was all, you know, so many of the people there were my clients, and it just really kind of brought it home for me in this very moving way, just how much, you know, these people were part of my life and that I wanted them there on such an important day. So that for me, you know, the relationships you get to have with these people are by far the most rewarding part of the job.
I can imagine. I mean, just in the time I've spent in teaching and the time I've spent in the kidlit world, I've seen immediately how connected and giving and loving a family this is. That's something that definitely resonates with me. I don't know. You just get a sense that we're all lifting each other up, that we're all helping each other along. And so people don't do stuff disingenuously in this field, in this profession, in this industry, if you will.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's such an amazing field. And I completely agree with everything you just said. Everyone is just kind of, there is this feeling of camaraderie and everyone is genuinely, I mean, you're making books for kids and that you can just, I think everyone genuinely feels so good about that, so proud of the work they're doing. I think everyone is so accepting. You don't get that cliquish sort of feeling like you do in you know, other industries. So it's a really, I think it's a really, really special field.
So I'm aware that your parents owned a bookstore when you were growing up. Mm-hmm. I've read probably a blog post or something about it. But is that why you eventually went into representing authors and illustrators later, or has that always been a connection for you?
Yeah, definitely. You know, my grandparents also owned a children's bookstore, and then my parents. So it's definitely kind of in my blood. And I grew up, you know, when I was really young in their store. I mean, the authors that kind of came through, you know, I got to see, you know, Beverly Cleary and all these different people coming through.
Wait, did you know that she was, sorry, I'm jumping into words. I'm just so excited. Did you know that Beverly Cleary was Beverly Cleary when she came through? Did that have weight to you some of these
years?
Yeah,
you know, it really did. And I think one of the many amazing things that, you know, my parents kind of instilled in me was just, and I think it relates to kind of what I do now, is when these people came through, I mean, they were celebrities to me, you know? So Beverly Cleary, like Chris Van Allsburg, all these different people, Barbara Cooney, coming through were just, to me, I mean, they were so, it was a huge, huge deal. There was sort of a really, almost a reverential kind of feel to it. So it was a really big deal. And I think it's contributed to the way I saw authors and the way I still do, and a lot of why I think I ended up doing what I do.
Well, that's to know then that's the presence, the feeling that came along with these visits also tells me then that I don't know, not that you ever would. We had, I used to work at a record store, and it was that same thing that there would be people coming through, and you just felt like no matter who they were, and even though there is that relationship, like here you were the one selling their books and putting them into the hands of readers that might not even know about these books. Likewise, I have that connection of introducing people to music that I know they might not have tried out before. And still there's this feeling of like, oh my word, you're the person that breathed life into those words and committed them to that page.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we'll have to have a different conversation about records because I'm a huge music fan. So I want to hear more about that. And I'm sad that there are not that many independent record stores around anymore. But I totally agree with you. I mean, I think a lot of it just goes back to almost the way you view art and its sort of ability to impact people. I mean, to me, you know, a great book or a great record, some of the records or books that have meant so much to me are just, you know, some people might just say, oh, that's kind of a cool thing. To me, it's like a life-changing thing. So meet someone who has, you know, created something that I consider to be this incredible achievement that has changed lives is a really big deal to me. It still is. But certainly when I was young.
Well, then absolutely. If you're regarding books, if you're regarding music, any medium with that sort of reverence, then I think you can't help but be in the right mindset when you meet these people or when you talk about those things. You must then have had the same experience that I have, and I guess so many other people have, that you get to meet these people that are huge deals in your life, but then have that weird experience of trying to explain to strangers that this is a really big deal that I got to meet this person. It was a life-changing thing. That's I don't know. That's something that I think it to me, it's always been sort of an awkward feeling, but something I really treasure, knowing that, Yeah, but that means this moment was mine. It was special to me.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to what you were saying about that's why this business is so great, because I think all of us in this business kind of understand that. And certainly there are other people we run into who, as you say, just don't have that connection to it or understanding of it. One of the great things about our business is that we all do understand why meeting Beverly Cleary is such an incredible thing, or Kristen Ellsberg, or whoever it is.
Yeah, or having Mac Barnett officiate your wedding.
Yeah, believe me, I feel very lucky.
It's like, and pardon me that I don't know your client list. Not that that's my job to know your client list, but speaking of that same reverence and just love, because it's all love in this. My friend Sherry, I have a collaborating partner in the library world, Sherry Gick, and we lovingly always refer to Dan Santat as hashtag Dan frickin' Santat because of just that love for him. And it's one of those that we try to tell anybody else, any teacher in our building, any whomever who may or may not know Dan, and it's they just don't get it. So to be able to have that experience of this is a person that when I read their words to a kid or when I show their pictures to a kid, this is what happens. The kids think I'm cooler because I share these works.
Absolutely.
That's cool. So how do you then become someone who represents these people? Is that, do you have like, I guess a business degree from college or something?
I don't know
what I'm talking about.
No, you know, it's, I worked in my parents' store, and, you know, I think about the time I was in college, I started to really connect with just, I just loved being in the store. I loved interacting with customers. I loved matching them with books, which is actually very similar to what I do now. I match an author with a publisher.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I think I realized I definitely wanted to be in the children's book industry. I didn't entirely know what an agent was at that point. But there is an agent here locally, and I was lucky enough to get an internship with her. And I think literally the first day I was in there, I just realized it was that magic kind of lightning bolt moment that it brought everything together for me. It brought, you know, my interest in the creative side and the authors with the business side. And, you know, I feel like that's what's I love about being an agent. You get all kind of the different sides of that, you know. There's a lot of different facets to the job, and it just brought that really all together for me. And I feel, you know, again, feel very fortunate for that internship or thankful for it.
You as an agent, I'm picturing that you must be a person that is, how am I trying to say this? Your personality type must be the type of person that is good at getting to know people or judging character well, in the way that you are able to judging, maybe not just people, but also just the right fit for stuff, right? Because it's not as if you work with one or two publishers. You're working with like all of the publishers, right? Plus all of your clients.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to, in your brain, work out when a story is right, and more importantly, when it's right for a certain publisher, and I understand that when you send it out, the publisher may or may not accept it, but still, that seems like, I mean, that's a pretty beyond kind of skill in my mind.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it is. I mean, it's one of my favorite parts of the job is just, you know, every single client I have is different, you know, and some of them are similar to one another, but at the end of the day, they're all quite different, and I love, you know, just the process of kind of getting to know them, understanding who they are, what their goals are, and helping them reach those goals. Because ultimately, that's my job, is to understand what someone wants and help them get it. And what one person wants might be different than the next person. And there's really not a right or wrong answer. It's just, you know, strategizing with that person, helping them to get to that goal. And I think, again, it goes back to my time as a bookseller. And I think I got pretty good at reading a customer really quickly and understanding, okay, this person's going to like this book. This person's probably going to like this book. So I think that's something I've always been sort of fascinated by. And it, you're right. I mean, it's very much something I do. And I think it's one of my favorite parts of the job.
So when you say the different, I guess like needs or wants, wishes of your different clients, do you mean like being published by a certain house, or do you mean like trying to sell, I don't know, like a series or sell a certain format? Like I really want to sell this story as a graphic novel, or is that what you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, partially, I think it's also just sort of big picture career-wise. You know, I think some people might want, you know, their primary goal might be lots of commercial success. They want to get their work out in front of as many kids as possible. I think other people, it might be, you know, sort of trying to do protect their creative process, or, you know, try to push the boundaries of creativity. For a lot of people, I think it's a mixture of both of those. But I think everyone is just a little bit different. And, you know, I think, again, that's part of what I'm trying to always ascertain is what exact, because once I know what someone wants, I think I can do a good job of helping them get that and make decisions. You know, I'm a big believer that every single decision an author makes, whether it's really tiny or really big, they all have a large or small impact on someone's career. So I think I'm a big believer in sort of owning all of your decisions. And I think in order to really do that, you have to understand where you want to go and what your goals are.
That makes sense. Do you, I mean, helping someone to know themselves, helping someone to sort of talk through what it is they want is a thing. Do you have, in your experience of representing people, do clients tend to come on and stay for a long time, or does someone get an agent for like one book, or is it usually like a career? I want to be writing for children for as long as I'm able to get published or sell works. Is there any like hard and fast answer to that, or is it kind of divided?
I think it really is a long-term thing. I mean, it's for someone's entire career. I mean, it doesn't always work out that way. I mean, sometimes, you know, a writer or illustrator will realize they're not the right fit with an agent, but you certainly hope, I think both sides hope that it is a long-term thing. And, you know, so many of my clients, as I mentioned, I mean, Sonia Sones, Elise Primavera, Marla Frazee, John Sheska, these are people I've been working with for many years. I mean, it's hard to believe, but I've been working with Mac for, I think, 10 years now, I mean, since he was in college. So, you know, these are, you do hope that they're really long, ongoing relationships. And I think that's kind of how you do get to know someone better. And, you know, I can do my job better as I see people go through different experiences and different processes.
So when for you, knowing that you're looking at career, looking at longevity with these, getting to know, maybe all agents are, I don't know, but I'm talking to you. Is this something then that you are spending time getting to know these people in their writing versus, I don't know, perhaps someone submits to you and you just like sign them right away?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always interested in talking to someone and just trying to and finding out what they're like, and again, what their goals are, how they approach the business, if we're kind of on the same page, but also where they're going, you know. And I mean, I'm not taking on a lot of new clients these days, but I just a couple weeks ago signed a really young illustrator who's actually a RISD student. And I think what was so exciting for me was just seeing her work, which I thought was fantastic, but then also understanding, I felt like her understanding of the business was so sophisticated and smart, and realizing that she's 22 years old and has just scratching the surface of her potential. So, you know, I think that to me is always really exciting when I feel like someone is only going to get better and they're committed to learning and working hard.
That would be exciting for me. I was just sharing that I had, I was talking to my wife prior to talking to you about how there's a couple, well, even like a couple, I guess you would say future guests of the podcast. We made connections, and I just said, oh my word, when your book comes out, I want to help promote it. And knowing how the business works, that sometimes means 8 or 10 months or sometimes longer.
Yeah,
But it's been neat to be, I mean, so I'm seeing you have that experience even more, but it's been really cool to be like along with someone through, some of my friends are authors, they don't illustrate. So when they get to see like, oh, this is the person they have in mind, or, oh, this is the person they signed and look at the beginning sketches they're doing. Or when something is, getting to be finished and while they're waiting for the publication to come out, I'm thinking of another particular book that they, I'll just say it. Cale Atkinson has a book coming out. His debut with Disney Hyperion is called To the Sea. And I've been buddies with Cale now for a while, for several months through Twitter, through things like that, where we kind of run with the same friends, and we talk about the same books. And it's been really cool to have this guy that I just liked his stuff from the little bit of, like, I don't know, portfolio stuff that was available on his website, to suddenly seeing this entire book that he's created that now in a couple weeks is going to be out in children's hands. That's a really cool thing. So here you are finding a person that just came from RISD and doesn't even have, I don't know if they have something to sell or is ready to sell to a publisher or not, but it sounds more like you're looking at, well, this is a person whose career is going to grow and who's going to, just you get to be along that life path.
Yeah, again, it's so rewarding and kind of an amazing thing. And I think that sense of joy you get from seeing a book for the first time is, you know, something you just never lose. I mean, just today I got a text from Jory John with a photo of his first copy of I Will Chomp You.
Yeah.
The book Bob Shea illustrated, which is amazing. And he was just, you know, his text was so, was very typical Jory, just really excited and enthusiastic. But it, you know, it's still to me such a neat feeling and kind of just touching to see that just pure joy that you get from seeing that for the first time. And so for me, yeah, I just feel so lucky that I've had so many of those moments. And I can still remember, you know, my first phone call with, you know, Carson Ellis and you know, just talking about picture books. Oh, at that time, man. She wasn't really thinking about making them herself, or seeing Mac and John Clausen meet for the first time, or all these different moments, you know, I've had in my career, which are just, again, incredible.
That, you see, you're throwing out names now. Now I'm getting all, like, not nostalgic is not the word, but I'm just losing myself in their books. This is great. This is great.
So
you have a good life. Okay, so you're mentioning names that are really big deals, and I know you're a big deal too. I'm just going to call it. Okay. But how in the world does John Cheska be with you, or Mac, or Lane, or whomever? Is it that they? I guess the bigger question maybe I'm asking is the process of how maybe all people go about signing an agent. But is this something that you? Do you seek people out, or do they always come to you, or is this like you're at SCBWI conferences and looking at stuff? I mean, it's probably 100 different answers, but
yeah, I mean, it's definitely an all of the above. I mean, I think, you know, like Sonia Sones and Bruce Hale, I met at an SCBWI conference very, very, very early on. You know, kind of a cool story about John and Lane. I actually met them at my parents' store. I think it was 1989, just to date myself. I was in high school, they were on their first tour for the True Story of the Three Little Pigs. And so I met them, you know, as a teenager when they were coming through the store. And then several years later, John, he didn't have an agent. He decided he needed one, and actually called my mom. And, you know, obviously she recommended me.
Yay, Mom.
Exactly. Thank you, Mom. And that's how I connected with John. And then, you know, funny enough, Mac went to school with John's daughter. So John connected Mac and I, and then John connected Lane and I. So owe a lot to John, but that's often how things happen, you know? And it's obviously the most flattering is when you get a referral like that. So a lot of it is referrals. Other times it might be at a conference, or it could just be a blind query. Or there have been many times, like in the case of Carson Ellis, I had seen her work on the cover of Decemberist Records, and definitely thought to myself, this person should be making kids books. So, you know, I approached Carson. There's been several people I've approached. So it kind of works in all different ways, and I think they're all kind of equally exciting.
Well, let me thank you on behalf of all librarians everywhere for helping to bring Carson Ellis into children's publishing. I spent all that time in the record store, and that was when the Decemberists were just releasing stuff. And I remember seeing them in small clubs around DC. And when her book came out, well, it came out like recently. I've seen art for a while, but it just came out last year, didn't it?
It actually just came out earlier this year.
Yeah, it was still this year then. So another one of those examples of when you end up just following someone, you are, well, I'm sure like you, are living with their art for a long time, that it almost is hard to put a date on when official things like book publications happen, but that's a fantastic book. And neat to have someone like that who feels, this is going to sound, I'm going to offend people. I'm not trying to offend people, but she seems so much of like of an artist person from an artist world. Whereas some kid lit illustrators feel like they grew up reading children's literature and they wanted to create children's literature. She just feels like she's of a different, cut from a different cloth. And I really like that she has a stake in children's publishing now.
Yeah, she is an incredible talent and one of the most creative people I've ever met. I mean, I think a lot of what I try to do, I guess, is I think something that's really important to me. I've always felt that I wanted to bring different voices into kids' books, whether it's from like the music world or the fine art world or animation. But I'm also, I think, fiercely protective of the tradition of kids' literature. And I it's important to me that sometimes you get people who ultimately don't really want to end up in kids' books. It's not really where they want to be. They sort of see it as a stepping stone to something else, or they don't think it's cool enough for them or whatever. And to me, you know, I think all the people who I've worked with who have come into it from different arenas, like Carson or John or Christian Robinson, I think they're all people who they think making a picture book is the best thing in the entire world. And those are the kinds of people I want to work with. So I love different voices, but it's also really important to me that they ultimately love this world as much as, you know, you and I were talking about earlier that we do too. And I think they're great examples of that.
I love that quote. They think making a picture book is the best thing in the world.
Exactly. I mean, to them, I mean, I think for Carson, you know, and John and Christian and everyone else I've named, Marla, all of them, I mean, to them, it's like there's nothing, there's no higher art form, there's no better feeling.
Wow.
So, in the, again, that's to me when I feel like I kind of know that when I talk to someone, and that's the kind of person I want to work with. And, you know, I think in terms of seeking people out, like I happened upon Christian's blog, and I think I could just tell it's a different blog now, but at the time, just reading his blog post and seeing kind of getting a feel for what kind of person he is and how sensitive he is.
Yeah.
I could just tell even just from those blog posts, like, this is someone I really want to work with. And I heard, you know, your podcast with him, and, you know, he's just such a sweet guy. And I mean, obviously crazy talented, but also just, he's just a real sweetheart. And
he was by far, and hopefully it shows in the conversation, one of my favorite people to talk to. And all I kept thinking, Steve, while I was talking to him, was this is a guy that creates things for Sesame Street. Like, when I was talking to him, it felt like a person who wanted intimately to have to contribute something to someone's childhood. And that, to me, is such a different perspective, to want to be a part of those memories that are so sweet for all of us, that just stay with us forever. I mean, I think some of the shorts he's done for Sesame Street, among now the picture books that he's doing, are going to be things that people will remember, the children will remember well into their adulthood.
I think you're right. I mean, he's, it's been really gratifying to watch his work connect with people so deeply. And, you know, I think there's something about his work that just really strikes a sort of an emotional chord with people. And I think I think at once it kind of reminds people of something from their childhood, but it also feels kind of fresh. And I think underneath all of it, there's this warmth to it that I think just, you can't really fake. I think it's because, as you say, it's part of who he is. And I think it really comes through.
Yeah, I agree. So you mentioned a couple minutes ago about how you're also receiving unsolicited queries. And I know just from talking to people and looking on websites and things like that. So you're accepting then these unsolicited queries. Just anybody who's like, I need an agent. This person seems like they're in line with what I'm doing. But how many do you receive? Because you, I guess, as a busy person myself, I'm looking at how do you manage different tasks, because you're working with the clients you have now, you're working with these publishers, and then you're also getting, I assume, probably a whole bunch of queries. I mean, if even just seeing, oh, Steve represents these people, I want to be represented by the person that represents these people, it must generate a lot of queries, right?
It does. But, you know, I think that part of the process is, to me, I think I've seen certain agents, you know, get a bit jaded about that process. And I always, you know, promised myself that I would never let myself. I always try to, you just never know where the next incredible thing is coming from. And I think exactly, you know, you have to remain open and, you know, I still open, you know, queries and email queries and with a sense of kind of hopefulness. And, you know, I mean, oftentimes it's not for me, but I still really appreciate when someone has put a lot of thought and time into it. And, you know, in many cases, I know that that person's going to do well and they'll probably be published. It's just not the right match for me at this moment. But I did have this incredible thing happen. It hasn't even been a couple of years ago, but with this woman named Elise Parsley, who, you know, she sent me a query. I think it was on a Tuesday. I read it. I immediately requested it. I read it right away. It was incredible. I offered her representation the next day, and by Thursday, we'd sold her book to Little Brown.
You sold it? Yeah. Oh, my word.
It was a very, very quick 72-hour process, and that book is actually coming out, and I can't believe it. And
it's Elise. Say her name again.
Her name is Elise Parsley, and her her first book is called If You Ever Want to Bring an Alligator to School, Don't. Little Brown is publishing it, and it's amazing. But I think that was just another example of, again, just being open-minded and, you know, you never know. And that book, it's a perfect fit for me and my sensibility. So, you know, the query, I think, process is something that I remain open to. I'd say, again, I'm not taking on a lot of new people, but you just never know. And I'm certainly open-minded about it.
I love then that you're, I mean, first off, you answered, of course, the correct answer of just being the excitement of what you could find. But for me, the, just imagining you opening with that anticipation that this could be something special. But what I'm also hearing in your words is that there's no jadism, whatever the word is. You're not reading them going like, here's another book about, I don't know, construction equipment and dinosaurs driving it or something, but rather that, that there's a sense of hope and wonder. This has got to come from you just having that instilled from such a young age, the wonder in children's books. It's great. It's just wonderful.
Thank you. I think I'm sure it is. And yeah, I mean, absolutely. I really try to. And I always tell, you know, my assistant the same thing. Like, we need to remain, you know, again, if the moment I think you let yourself get jaded, I think I don't know if it's over for you, but I feel bad for those people because, again, I mean, you just, like with Elise Parsley and many people over the years for me, I mean, you just never know where the next incredible thing is coming from. And even if it's not, again, the right thing for me, anyone who has taken the time to do their research and present themselves in a professional way and put in their time, I mean, I just believe, you know, they deserve the courtesy of an answer and they deserve my attention for that. That's the time when I'm reviewing their query. So I try to remain, again, very open-minded about that process.
Man, Steve, you're an awesome guy. You're a heck of a guy. I don't even want to ask you another question. I'm going to just end with the kickball question because everything you said is just wrapped up so nicely. I'm just going to say that you clearly are an incredible guy. You can hear it in the passion of your words. You can hear it in the sincerity of the way you talk about people that are or are not your clients. You are just a person that I think approaches life with a sense of wonder and love. And that's a really good thing to know that is a person on the other side of publishing. When I'm on the side of getting the books and getting to read them to children and enjoy that, to know that a person like you is on the side of not only recognizing talented people and talented works, but making sure that the publishers recognize that too. You are clearly a gift to publishing to have you in publishing. So thank you for being you.
Oh, wow. That is so incredibly nice. I feel like, you know, you could have given the toast at my wedding. What a nice thing to say.
Hardly. I'm really good when my earbuds are in and I'm just talking to a computer screen. Okay, so listen, I'm assembling an all-star Kid Lit Dream Team kickball tournament, and Steve, I'd love to know what one person alive or past from the Kid Lit world you would want on your team and why.
That is a tough question. You know, I'd have to give it a lot of thought, but I'm just going to, off the top of my head, I'm going to say Barbara Cooney, actually, just She just seemed like a really feisty person who would kind of do whatever it took. So I'm gonna go with her.
Excellent. A feisty person who would do whatever it took.
Exactly. And if you see a picture of her, I think you will see it's not the obvious choice, but because she was quite elderly, but she was, I was lucky enough to have met her. She did write my favorite picture book of all time, Miss Rumphius. And
Rumphius.
It's an incredible, incredible book.
The book that I think maintains a staple in every classroom, at least every elementary school classroom. My professors talked about that book. I continue to talk about that book. I feel like that's one almost literally the teachers will not let go out of print, let alone the rest of publishing.
But it's it's an amazing book, and I feel like the world would be a better place if everyone read that book. It's truly a perfect picture book.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Steve, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, and again, for all the work that you're doing to get good books published, to get good stories told, and to get that recognition to good people out there. I'm glad you're out there doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much. It was really fun.
Like what you hear? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a comment on the blog at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's Koko Sleep, and I'll see you there.